It's the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast, episode 235. I'm your host, Adam Mangum. On this episode, Ben Criddle of ESPN 960 comes on to discuss that killer 2016 football schedule and what effects a QB battle might have on these Cougars. Matt and I then discuss why conference expansion talk breeds stupidity, and then we relate our favorite memories of BYU sporting events we attended in person. This is the CougarFan.com Rise and Shout podcast. Follow us on Twitter at BYU_RiseShout. Like us on Facebook at Facebook.com/RiseAndShout. And listen to us right now. All right, welcoming back to the podcast, Ben Criddle, media personality and former Cougar. Ben, welcome back to the podcast.
What's up, fellas? Thanks for having me.
So, let's dive into everyone's favorite or least favorite topic, which of course is conference expansion. You guys have talked about that on your show a bit this summer with all the different news and things. As you kind of look at that as a former player and as somebody that talks about and covers the team a bit, do you feel like this is something that will distract this team if it's not resolved going into the season? Or do you think it's one of those things that is a player and coaching staff, it's out of your control anyway, so they'll just roll into the season. If it's not resolved, it won't affect them too much.
No, within the team, no one really cares about conference expansion, conference affiliation. They're looking at the schedule. I'm sure that there might be some that follow it, typically juniors and seniors that maybe are more football fans than actually football players, right? I would say within the football program, though, and its players as a whole, they don't really look at that stuff. They don't care about it. They're not reading up on it. They're so consumed by school, dating, football, church. It's a rarity to have someone within the football program that is well-versed on anything to do with conference expansion.
Right.
Nor do they really care. They just care about, kind of the normal things that a 19 to 24-year-old kid cares about, and that's football and typically ladies.
Yep, that is typically what they – I didn't even play on the team, and that's all I cared about between 19
and 24.
That's
all you cared about, right, when you were at BYU?
Well, let's talk about that 2016 schedule, Ben. Last time we had you on, we talked a little bit about this but didn't dive too deep in. Obviously, looking at a schedule is kind of a murderer's row. It depends on how good some of these teams are, and you never – quite no, but I would say Utah, UCLA, Michigan State, obviously, Boise, and maybe a few others are going to be really, really tough games. And as I said, there's probably, when you add West Virginia and heck, even Toledo or Utah State could be added to that list as well. Going into the season, I've seen a lot of predictions of 5-7, 6-6 for the Cougars coming up. What do you think is that baseline for success? Is anything better than 6 wins with this schedule and a new coaching staff a good season, or do you think for them to really have a good season, they've got to do even better than that?
I'd say a good season is 8-4. I'd say a good enough season would be to go kind of 6-6 and then get a bowl victory, so 7-6. But if you get over that, if you get 8 wins plus in this with this schedule, I think you should be elated as a BYU fan. I think you should be, as you go into this season, there are certain things that you get excited about and you get optimistic about BYU's chances with the return of Ty Detmer and having Taysom and Tanner back there. I mean, so much of college football is based around the quarterback position and the stability there, the playmaking ability, the moxie that individual brings and the leadership abilities. And so you look at that and sometimes it doesn't even matter who your coach is because you have a great quarterback. He makes up for, he covers a multitude of weaknesses, if you will. So those are things that you get really excited for. The other thing you look at with the schedule is there's a lot of new quarterbacks, right? Because of the fact that you're facing so many new quarterbacks or young quarterbacks at that, you're like, wow, like you should be, pretty excited about the schedule that you have before you. Michigan State's breaking in a new quarterback that has a little bit of experience. Still Rosen, the Rosen one, it was a good quarterback last year, but he's still young. And he makes mistakes. He threw a lot of interceptions versus BYU's defense last year, and BYU's defense this next year could be even better, I think, in takeaways and sacks and TFLs. Utah's breaking in a new quarterback. Arizona has their fair share of quarterback competition right now. Anu Solomon was good last year, but we had Rich Rod on, and he says, no, we're not giving it to Anu. The two quarterbacks are pushing Anu right now. And Mississippi State, new quarterback. You just go down the list, and there's new quarterbacks everywhere. And BYU has two quarterbacks that have substantial playing time, so you should be optimistic. But still, I like to be measured and calculated and realistic, and I think there's going to be some growing pains, and I think there's depth issues at certain positions that you should be concerned about, and health issues, and BYU has to deal with those. And once you get into game six and you're going against Michigan State away, I mean, we experienced that this last year at Michigan, right?
Yeah.
How many injuries did we sustain in that Michigan game? We looked pretty good versus UCLA. We looked really strong. Following week, you're depleted and injury ridden, and you get essentially stomped in that first half, and can't really bounce back from it. But I think 8 wins is solid. I think that'd be a really good season, and that's what you should shoot for if you're a BYU coaching staff. But if you win 6 games and hopefully beat Utah and go to a bowl game, I'd say you have a big smile on your face as a BYU fan. If you don't beat Utah, though, 6 wins, there might be a little bit of sourness and bitter aftertaste after the season.
So let's get to that Utah game, because obviously that's the big early season barometer, and obviously it's the rivalry game, and it's also Satake's chance to stick it to his former employer. Now, before, in the last regime and somewhat in the past, I think the rivalry had kind of taken on a different tone a little bit. Obviously, we've got at least one basketball coach that thinks rivals shouldn't play each other. But for this football game, as we look at this, is this really the game that decides, like you said, if you win 8 games but lose to Utah, I think there would still be a little bit of griping out there. From a fan perspective, let's forget about the coaches and players for a second. From a fan perspective, next to Michigan State, isn't that the one that you think the fans want the most?
Yeah, I think so. But would they substitute a 5-7 season for a win over Utah?
I wouldn't.
I don't think so.
Yeah, I
don't think
that.
So. That's the thing. I think, and that's the question that you bring up to BYU fans: would you substitute a 5-7 season for a win, or would you trade that for a win versus Utah? And I think, like, no, they still want to go to a bowl game, right? There might be some. There's always the vocal minority that are on the social media platforms that make a ruckus, and they're on message boards. But I think the majority of BYU fans are very grounded. They're educated. they understand that the long-term success and momentum of the BYU football team and health of the football team has to do with wins and going to bowl games, because there's, as an independent, I think it's imperative to go to a bowl game. I think it's imperative. Like, that's a very solid selling point that Bronco Mendenhall really, I thought, did a good job of marketing, because you can't get paid as a football player. You can't get paid as a scholarship athlete. Tell you what though, that stipend and those bowl gifts, they went a long way. It's upwards of about, now they have the cost of attendance, which is helpful, and BYU uses that to its advantage, I think, in recruiting. That's an extra $1,000 to maybe $15 of swag and money that is more important sometimes for the long-term health of your program and getting more athletes to come to BYU. Maybe it might hurt you with in-state recruiting, perhaps. It very well could, and it has maybe in the past, but it's still been extremely competitive. Gregor Bell put out that stat recently in his Cougar quizzes. Out of the last 18 games, 15 of them have been decided by 7 or less points. And it's still very competitive, even though BYU's lost 5 straight. It's unfortunate, but I still think that BYU fans understand that you need to go to a bowl game, and they wouldn't sacrifice a win over Utah. Most of them wouldn't, I don't think.
No, I think you're right. So going back to, like, Satake's obviously worked for Whittingham. He coached there, obviously played at BYU, was part of the rivalry. Do you think this will change the rivalry, having coaches that, number one, seem to respect each other a lot and work together, but also, number two, both have been in the rivalry on both sides? Do you think that will change how it is, or do you expect it will still be the same, you know, hard-fought game that it typically is? The storylines get a little better because you've got two guys that have worn both colors.
Yeah, I don't know. I think what Kalani wants, he's been very vocal about it in the media. He wants some more civil rivalry. He doesn't want hatred involved in it. He wants both fan bases to be mutually respectful of the traditions and the success that they've had. Still have it be heated, have it be emotional, have it be, have these football players be extremely passionate about winning, and same goes for the coaches. But, I think that's what they hope for. And I think Kyle will fall in line with that. I think you're going to see Kyle and Kalani, you know, take more pictures together and
right.
to maybe help out it. I mean, there's the annual golf tournament where, Lavelle and Ronnie Mack, that Lavelle and Ronnie Mack made famous. And so you're going to have the Legends golf tournament. It's going to be better in that regard, just because we know that Bronco and Kyle really didn't like each other. Both of them extremely competitive. Bronco, ran BYU a certain way. And I think Kyle Whittingham looked down at BYU and he didn't even recognize the school that he had played at,
right.
I don't know if Kyle blames Bronco for that, or if Kyle realizes that it's just another day. It's change time the things that BYU has to do, as a football program, the academic standards and the honor code. It's not what it once was. In fact, you could make the argument that the University of Utah looks more like BYU of the 70s, 80s and 90s and early 2000s than what BYU looks like currently. I think you can definitely make that argument. So, I think Kalani really wants to try his best to re-implement the Lavelle Edwards way of doing things, and with his own flavor, obviously. But I don't know if it's possible. I think he's going to try his best, but there are certain obstacles that you just can't get over now. But I hope it can be more like how Lavelle had it. I just don't think with the changes in college football and media coverage and changes within BYU and academics and the honor code that it can really be replicated as it once was.
Yeah. I hope you're right. I really do. I don't live in Utah now, so it doesn't have the same, but some of the stuff gets ugly, and it'd be nice if some of that stuff went away. Well, no off-season storyline discussion would be complete without me asking you about the quarterback situation. So a year mm-hmm. ago, we were talking about Taysom for Heisman, and
yeah.
He had this chance to, with his skill set, put up huge numbers and be in a lot of preseason Heisman prep lists had him listed. And we were just thinking Tanner's going to sit there and watch and learn. Obviously, that changed very quickly from game one, and it was Tanner's team last year. Now, got both of them on the roster again, except this time Tanner has a year experience and probably the best freshman year that a BYU quarterback has ever had. What does this do for a team as a former player, as someone who is, on the defensive side of the ball? Do you care as a player which one of those guys gets in? I mean, we know in the past there have been some quarterback controversies that seem to divide the locker room at BYU, but most years it doesn't seem that that's the big storyline. Is this something where you think it's going to be a big story throughout, or do you think just whoever wins it in the beginning gets it, and it's probably Taysom, and if he stays healthy, he does it, then we start again the next year?
Yeah, I think it's, whether we like it or not, I think it is Taysom's job to lose right now. It's tough for me to say that because I got roasted by BYU fans when I came out after, I think it was the Boise State game, and I said, like, guys, it's time to move on from the Taysom Hill era and embrace Tanner Mangum. And, you know, I've since changed my tune just because I've seen certain things on film. You watch narrow and wide angles, and you compare Tanner Mangum at the end of the season to Taysom Hill in fall camp in that Nebraska game, and there is a difference between decision making and timing and understanding of route concepts and defensive schemes that can be anticipated by a senior, right? I mean, and it's difficult for a freshman to do that. And not to say that Tanner can't close that gap or that Tanner can't make up for it with phenomenal playmaking ability. Like I was talking about this a few days ago, he's got pixie dust in his fingers. He's got that moxie that just you can't replicate. How is it that he can throw a football up in the air and it's not necessarily even on target? And for most quarterbacks, it's a 50-50, but with Tanner Mangum, it's a 90-10. Yeah. It's going to be completed 90% of the time. That just it's ludicrous to me because all the rules of football tell me that was not the right decision. Yet Tanner makes it, and it always works out for him.
And so
you never discount that guy. You never doubt that individual because he just knows how to make plays and. So it will be a competition. The thing that I love about Tanner right now is I think he's enjoying being the underdog right now. I think he's enjoying his off season and he's got a chip on his shoulder a little bit, not a chip. That's the wrong thing. Cause the chip has a negative connotation to it. It's this drive and desire to be perfect and to be the best and to prove to everybody that he is the best quarterback at BYU. So I think he's really savoring this off season and he's utilizing it as a kind of this motivation that Taysom's coming back for this godlike football player, right? With these Greek godlike abilities and the former Heisman candidate that the Bo Jackson of BYU. If I can surpass that after the season that I had, that's the cherry on top. It's all part of, in his mind, the story that's going to play out. And it's going to play out for him and it's perfect. And it just gives him another opportunity, another obstacle to jump over because, how many times has he done that? How many challenges has he faced that he conquered with that pixie dust in his fingertips and that moxie, that ability to just make plays coming back from a 35-0 deficit versus Utah and having a chance to win the football game. And now granted it came on the shoulders of the defense in that final drive. It was unfortunate because how magical would that have been?
Oh man.
Tanner Mangum on that last drive had BYU's defense held its ground, had Travis Tuiloma not gotten injured. That bitter old hag, Liz Frank, biting him in the foot. I hate that woman, but you know, I wish we would have been able to see that because that could have, you know, had that happened. Imagine if Tanner Mangum would have won that football game and then Taysom Hill comes back. How many BYU fans are saying, this is not the right decision. We got to have, you know, Tanner's got to be the guy, right?
That's
the greatest comeback in BYU football history. That would have been probably... I don't know. It would have been up there with the Miracle Bowl had that happened. Tanner Mangum been given that opportunity, just, you know, for a moment, think about it. And I believe that he would have won that football game had you given him the football with a minute remaining, right?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I think a lot of us think had he gotten the shot, he could have done it. And you make good points. It's hard to say, you know, with Taysom coming back, It's hard sometimes to justify Taysom getting a shot when after Tanner had such a good year. But then you remember a couple of years ago when Taysom played a whole season and you think, gosh, you know, but I mean, isn't this a good problem to have? I mean, BYU's had other years, and I'm not going to pick on any quarterbacks in particular, but isn't this kind of okay to have this? Wouldn't you rather have this than have two guys that can't get it done?
Oh, it's a marvelous thing. It's going to be a marvelous work and a wonder. LeGrand Richards style. I mean, this is what it's going to be, and I hope it all turns out. And it's a fairy tale ending for this BYU football team, but having depth at the quarterback position is a luxury that most college football teams do not have. I mean, even look at, so 2 years ago, Ohio State was like, oh, wow, you got three Division I quarterbacks, and all of them are just NFL caliber players. And then this year, they still had depth, but none of them showed up, right? I mean, so I look at the luxury that BYU has in having two proven quarterbacks at the Division I level, and both of them can make plays when healthy. And I don't know if there's, there might be a team out there that has three deep that maybe are better than the three that BYU has, but I don't know. I think those top two quarterbacks in Tanner and Taysom, that they're definitely in probably the top 10 as far as best quarterback crews or best quarterback depth in the nation. Can we all agree with that?
Yeah, I think we can for sure. I think we can for sure. Well, Ben, thank you for coming on the show. We'll, of course, always recommend that people check you out on ESPN 960, day 4 to 7, right? On your ride home, and as you're getting ready for the evening, check out Ben Criddle and his show. Otherwise, thanks for coming on, and we'll have you on again soon.
Yeah, you can also download our podcast on iTunes, Spreaker, Stitcher, and Google Play Music, too. So ESPN 960 Sports, ESPN960Sports.com.
All right. Thanks, Ben.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Rise and Shout Podcast, episode 235. Matt, what's up, my friend?
How are you? How are you this day?
I am doing well. I'm about to be doing better, though. You want to know why?
Why is that? Oh, here it is.
You know how I had stopped drinking soda?
Yeah, right.
I've stopped drinking soda.
That was a good move. You made the right decision there. I'm proud of you.
I've gone back. I'm back, Dr. Pepper. I'm back. So anyway, Matt, last week we started out with talking about a baseball player punching another baseball player. This time we have our first right out of the tweet bag.
Tweet bag.
Andre Hutchins, which you'll hear from him again, that's at @AC_Hutchins on Twitter, asked this: please discuss the kick. Now, of course, he is referring to Draymond Green's kicking. I can't think of the Thunder guy's name, who looks like a cross between Vlade Divac and Scott Pollard.
And that guy that went to Gonzaga.
Yes, yes, yes. He's like all three of those guys put together.
And Morrison, him, or whatever his name was.
Adam Morrison, not the actual player we're talking about. Anyway, do you think this was intentional? Matt, I've watched the video back several times. Is there any way it's not intentional?
I only had to watch it twice. It's clearly intentional.
How does your...
Can we stop pretending like there's any chance it isn't?
Like, how does his leg go up like that? What basketball move would require your leg going up like... And I am pro Golden State Warriors. I love the Warriors. And I think they're in a little bit of trouble. We're recording this on Tuesday night, so
a little bit of trouble. Last I checked the score, they were getting smoked again.
It's terrible. I hate it when the best teams get smoked.
It's too bad, right?
I want greatness.
Right. Let's see him finish this thing out. Nope.
72-53 at half. Very exciting for all our listeners who will know what the final score is before I even post this thing.
Well, it'd be roughly 150-100.
Yes, that would. So
the kick was intentional. I did ask a friend of mine who played some high level basketball. I mean, he didn't play in the NBA, but he played more. He was on more Big 12 rosters than I've been on. So I asked him, you know, what his thoughts were. And he's like, well, you know, you go up, you get fouled, and you kind of flail out a little bit, like it just happened to hit him, and then no. Well, I looked at him, I'm like, come on, don't.
No. Now, the other question is, would you have suspended Draymond Green in the playoffs?
Yep.
Yeah, see, I wouldn't. I wouldn't have suspended him.
See, no, it's just like any other game.
No, it's not. No,
that behavior's not acceptable.
It's either acceptable or it isn't. That kind of thinking stole a championship away from the Phoenix Suns.
Or that kind of behavior stole a championship away from the Phoenix Suns.
If your guy gets hip checked, you know, you shouldn't, and you take one step off the court, you shouldn't. Wasn't it the Suns? Or was it, am I doing it the other way around? It stole it from the Spurs?
I don't remember.
You're like, I don't follow the NBA.
No, I don't. I'm not following this one. But listen, the kick was intentional. If this were 3 months ago, would they have suspended him?
I think so. I think they would have done it.
Yeah. So I think you've got to suspend him, or you've just got to say it's okay because the NBA is basically the WWE now.
Yes. Well, no, it's not. They don't even throw punches anymore, dude. Like, the NBA is, like, so much softer than the one I grew up watching, where they throw punches in playoff games and not suspend them.
But you know what? I'm almost more accepting of that than I am of this. That's just a cheap shot, dude.
That's
off limits.
Yes. It was 2007, I believe, Robert Horry hip-checked Steve Nash into the boards. Horry was then playing for the Spurs, and of course Steve Nash was playing for the Suns, and the rest is history. Another thing that Andre asked us in that same tweet, Matt, and I had not seen this until he said it, UCLA signed a $280 million deal with Under Armour. So much for the sports bubble.
Yeah.
Right, and I know this isn't TV rights, but I'm just telling you, man. So much for the sports bubble. There's still a lot of big money in college, and it's another evidence of college players might need to be paid.
What are you talking about? It's amateurs. They're amateurs.
Yeah. I think can you imagine the NFL signing an apparel deal and saying, "But we're not giving any to the players."
No, this is for the student athletes.
This is all about the school. It has nothing to do whether you guys are good or not.
Yes.
Yes. I know. So let's...
Listen, all we know here, based on his tweet, all we know is the UCLA signed a $280 million deal with Under Armour. They could have signed up to sponsor lab coats.
Lab coats, yes.
Number two pencils for the testing center.
Number two pencils. Maybe they did... maybe they're just giving out some workout geared to people that like to run on campus.
Scholarships in exercise science.
There you go. You're right. We are making some assumptions, Matt.
We are indeed. You know what happens when you assume.
No, what does happen?
You might be wrong.
Oh, okay.
Yep.
So Matt, let's go now into the CougarFan.com Cougars in the news.
Cougars in the news.
You know, you do that the exact same. I've actually been asked by listeners if we've recorded it, and I insert it.
I'm just that good.
You're just that good. Just nail it every time.
Listen,
man.
I'm not good at a lot in life, but I'm above average at yelling Cougars in the news in that same voice.
I believe you are well above average in that, Matt. Don't sell yourself short. You're like the 90th percentile.
I appreciate the vote of confidence. It means a lot.
I'm sure it does. Yep. BYU baseball was able to salvage a part of the WCC title, their first conference title since, I think, a long time ago.
I think it's 2001.
I think it's 2001. In also news, CBS Sports reported today that the NCAA has granted BYU baseball an exception if they make it to the NCAA tournament, meaning that whoever hosts the regional that they are in will have to do the Thursday-Saturday format instead of the Friday-Sunday format. Matt, this is not the first time BYU has done that. It's actually has been done a couple of times before.
Yeah.
So if they make the tournament, they won't have to worry about the Sunday decision. We'll get back to Sunday playing in a minute. Next, let's go to our Cougars in the Pros segment. With the first pick in the NFL draft.
Boo! Sit down,
the
get
Oakland
out.
Raiders. Dennis,
select Las Vegas.
Select Las Vegas is their new destination. Should there be a team in Las Vegas?
Yes.
Yes. I mean, here's the other thing with Oakland. Have you seen that stadium? Like, that's bad. Like, I know that Arlington, your friends up north in Dallas, are being a bunch of pansies and they want to build a new stadium. But, like, the Coliseum really needs to be blown up, right? Did you see the meme where they had the Oakland and fans from Oakland and Tampa Bay saying, "We'll take your stadium"? Like, just airlift it to Oakland or Tampa Bay. It'd be a huge upgrade for either of those fan bases. Yeah. Anyway, so Dennis Pitta-Matt has decided to keep playing football despite all of the injuries he's had lately. I think I know your opinion on this, but what's your take on Pitta deciding to keep trying to play NFL football?
You got to make hay while the sun shines, my friend.
Yes.
If you still got a shot, you got to get after it. You got a whole lot of life in front of you to go do something else.
Yep. And as long as there's no serious worries of permanent damage or injury, which, of course, could be there.
Well, given the injuries he's had, he's probably going to deal with some type of chronic pain.
Yeah, I think that's
like
if we're just
honest, right?
Yep.
But at the end of the day, it's his decision, and I think Dennis Pitta knows enough to understand that risk, and that's the decision he's going to make.
Yep, absolutely. Staying in the NFL, Matt, Mitch Matthews, Kansas City star, reporting that he is a rookie free agent player to watch. Now let's, before we get too excited about this, remember this is just them filling in some space at the end of an article, not. It wasn't a whole piece on Matthews, but I think he sticks, if not in Kansas City, somewhere else. But I think he's on a roster or practice squad come week one. Matt, what do you think?
Yeah, I'm still there. You know, we talked about this a few weeks ago. I don't know that Kansas City is the right place. I don't know if the right opportunity exists there, given the personnel that they have on the roster.
Yep.
But I think this is a good opportunity for him to turn some heads. And if it doesn't work in Kansas City, hopefully he's impressed some coaches enough that they can put in a call or let other people know what they've seen while they've had him in camp.
Now, our brother Don, speaking of Mitch Matthews, and some others on Twitter and other forums have backed you up, Matt, in your selection of Todd Watkins over Mitch Matthews, which I gave you a hard time for.
Yes, they have.
Including Don saying, can you imagine them running the triple option with if you had selected Taysom and you had Unga, Taysom, and then throw over the top to Watkins?
Would have been a pretty deadly combination.
But you didn't select Taysom.
No, I did not.
Nope. So that option actually wouldn't be there. Robertson.
And I've even waffled on my pick of Watkins over Mitch Matthews.
Yes, you have. But that's okay. You waffle all the time.
That's what I do.
Yeah, you'll be a great politician someday.
Yep, can't wait.
Can't wait. I'm actually writing you in for president, so.
You're not the first person to tell me that.
Be careful. You might win.
Don't think I'm eligible.
Yeah, you are. How old are you? You're old enough.
I'd have to find my birth certificate.
You'd have to find your birth certificate? Does it have the United States on it or a different country?
I don't know. Does Salt Lake count as a different country? To some people, it does.
Depends on who you're talking to. I think some Big 12 boosters think it's a different country. Matt, sticking in the NFL again, Robertson Daniel, really good piece over at Packers.com about him and how basically he went from not even being on the team to practice squad guy to all of a sudden there he is playing meaningful snaps at the end of the year. Matt, you and I were on record a year ago. We thought he could, because of his tackling ability, at least be a special teams guy, if not a contributor in some defensive packages. It looks like, Matt, he is going to have a good shot at making that roster for Green Bay and making an impact.
It's awesome. The more of these guys that are able to create opportunities like that, the better it is for the program, in my opinion.
Yep. That's amen to that. Moving over to the NBA, Kyle Collinsworth worked out for the Minnesota Timberwolves yesterday, I believe, if I'm remembering correctly. I'm not still very bullish on his opportunity to get drafted or make an NBA roster. Matt, does this change anything for you?
No, but my question is, if he is drafted by the Timberwolves or signed by the Timberwolves, how quickly will you own a Kyle Collinsworth Minnesota Timberwolves jersey?
As quickly as the customization feature at NBA.com allows it.
That's fantastic.
Or maybe a jersey. I don't know. Basketball jerseys.
No, you got to wear a basketball jersey. Show off the pipes.
I don't have pipes.
Come on, Mangum.
I have pipe cleaners. I don't have pipes, okay? Let's not get out of here.
I don't think your arms are that fuzzy.
Your arms might be. Matt.
Hello.
Deseret News article I thought was kind of funny. It's a YouTube video. There's a new we don't usually advertise other people's shows on here, but there's the YouTube show Cougars on Cougars.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, I don't know if one of these their hosts, the two girls that host, I don't know if one of them, they're connected to Gemma or somehow, but they've got people reading his tweets and his wife basically saying he's the worst tweeter ever. So did you watch the video?
I did not, but this is not the first time that Fredette has been accused of being a boring Twitter follow.
So let me say this to you, Matt. Is he a boring Twitter follow? I
yes.
follow him. I actually get more entertainment out of his wife's tweets.
Oh, the wife's tweets are great. Whitney's tweets are fantastic. Jimmer, you know what? Jimmer's good at other things.
He's good at a lot of other things. Yes, that is true. Tweeting may not be it.
Nope.
Tweeting may not be it. My favorite on the list was she gave him a hard time about him saying they were playing in Baltimore that night. And, you know, there's not a NBA team in Baltimore anymore, but it was like one of those games that they play in a different place. And he's like, well, I just wanted people to know so they wouldn't be confused. It's fantastic. Oh, bless your heart, Jimmer. Of course, we just talked about Kyle Collinsworth and Jimmer that were in our little draft thing we did a few weeks ago. We will be revisiting that here in a few minutes. But first, Matt, everyone's favorite topic, conference expansion.
I was so excited when I saw this on the agenda.
So a couple things to talk about this week. I'm going to skip some of the stuff I had on our agenda. I'm going to stick to two things. The Austin American Statesman, which is, of course, the paper that covers the Texas Longhorns, they talked about their expansion tour, and they're basically going through. Kevin Little is the staff writer that does it. Matt, it's a bunch of gibberish. Okay? It's absolute and total garbage. All right? Not mentioned in here is BYU just kicked the crap out of Texas two times in a row. Strange that that's not ranked. That's not here. Huh. Where is that? Or the time we beat Oklahoma, when they had that quarterback. What was his name that went to the NFL? Bradford? I don't see that mentioned here. It's weird.
That's weird.
Or, yeah, I don't know. It's weird. I'm getting tired of some of these negatives that are being recited as if they're true, when I have yet to see any actual evidence that they are. And if you list opposing fans point to BYU's older athletes, I quite frankly, I can't take you seriously. I can't. So, bunk, garbage.
Listen, I've said this a million times. I'm going to say it one more time. If LDS athletes going on missions provided a competitive advantage, people would be recruiting the Dickens out of any of these players in the top four.
What are you talking about? They'd be sending all their players on mission trips for other churches or for the Peace Corps.
It would be insane.
You know what I'm saying? Like, if this was clearly an advantage, like, anybody who says that even writes that garbage, I'm sorry, I can't respect that they have any idea what they're talking about.
Go talk to any of these coaches that go recruit a big-time LDS athlete. They don't want that kid to go on a mission.
Not unless it's basketball or some sport where you have limited rosters and it might save a crunch for you. Other than that, you're absolutely right. Why would you recruit them and say, I would love to see you in 2 years?
Yeah, it's that whole thing is so tired and old.
Yeah,
but it is great that we're not even going to mention the games against this team.
Yes.
That's just silly.
No. Okay. Yeah, I'm So the other one that came out of the Austin American Statesman, which I used to kind of respect, but I'm not sure my respect is going down. There was a very short article about how Santonio billionaire Red McCombs, who is a big-time contributor to Longhorn Athletics, thinks the Big 12 should expand, and here is his money quote. I think we need to add two teams to the Big 12 and should have done it 2 years ago. The first one should be the University of Houston. Then it would be your choice of several others. Your choice? Like, who's he talking to? Like,
I'm not sure.
The people in the crowd?
No, I think it's Suzanne Halliburton's choice, the woman who wrote the article.
No,
she gets to choose.
She didn't get the quote. ESPN Radio in San Antonio got the quote. So does whoever the host was get to pick?
I guess
so. Is that what Red wants to do here?
Red's a loose cannon.
He's an innovator. He's a loose cannon. Here's the thing. This is why I brought these two stories up. Right now, people, Big 12 fans, BYU fans, Cincinnati fans, Houston fans, everyone is on pins and needles waiting to see what happens. So when there's no news, this is the kind of stuff that's going to get drummed up over and over again over the next few months. Because there's not going to be any news right away, right? At some point, they will either expand sometime between now and the beginning of the season or put it off, right? Mm-hmm. And if they put it off, it only makes it worse because it's not as if they're going to say no forever, right? It'll all come up again. But until they make a decision, this is the crap we're going to have to deal with, stupid articles like these.
Yep.
Boy, that felt good. I got a little angst out of my system.
I don't have anything against Red McCombs, though.
No, I don't have anything against
him. But he's wrong. Houston's not the right fit either.
That's a Texan speaking, right? Right?
Yeah.
Like, if you're Oklahoma or Oklahoma State fan, like, do you want Houston in the Big 12? Like,
nope.
What does that do for you if you're Oklahoma or Oklahoma State? Or more to the point, if you're TCU and Baylor. Like, you know, TCU's like, we finally get in the club and now you're going to let them in? You know? That seems less exciting. So, Matt, last 2 weeks ago, we drafted the top 10 basketball players of all time. I am now starting to write some articles for the Deseret News and long-form stuff that will often have things to do with what we talked about in the podcast. So what I did was I wrote this story for the Des News, and it basically recapped our draft and profiled each of the 10 players that we selected. So, Matt, There were people that took some umbrage with what we did. All right? Let's Roll out of Lehigh, Utah says, Matt takes Hawes with his second pick. Wow, I'd take Jackson Emery over Hawes. Put him in a backcourt with Ainge, and you have two above-average defenders who can score, and score at will if they're being defended by Jemmer and Hawes. that was
funny. I was ready to defend that until he got to the end. Like, oh yeah, that may be a point.
Yeah. Anyway, good quote from him. Another one we had was certainly one of the top five players, and this is a miss that we didn't even discuss him. This is Mel Hutchins. He led the 1951 team to the NIT title, which was a big deal back then. He was a 6'5" center, so it's hard to project him in the modern era. But he was the second pick in the NBA draft, so obviously people thought he was a pretty good college player. And so Mel Hutchins was one we missed. He should have been at least discussed, if not in that top 10. You agree?
I agree. That was a miss.
And then after that, we got some praise for the Krešimir Kosić and having him in there from a reader in Spanish Fork, Utah. Also on our website for the podcast, that's ajmangum.podbean.com. We had a comment as well that now I'm not finding. And he says, Fred Roberts would dominate most of the players you chose. End of story, says Thane Bingham. I win. All right. Thanks, Thane.
I like the confidence. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. He's got the confidence. And I agree with that. Roberts is but like we said, a lot of the players we discussed, could you have moved them up or down that order pretty easily? Yes.
Yes.
And are some of the players we didn't draft eligible is the wrong word, worthy of being talked about in the top 10? Absolutely. Would you put Hutchins over anybody you drafted? Yeah, see, that's where it gets hard, right?
See, but the thing is, you got to keep in mind, when we did this, we were looking at putting a team together.
Yes.
Not necessarily like who's the best, second
but
best,
I
third
didn't
best,
even,
fourth best.
But I didn't even think of Hutchins. I think it might have changed my draft a little bit. I might have taken
him instead
of Michael Smith.
I wouldn't have played him at center. Would you have played him at center?
No. No. But, I mean, at 6'5", with his defensive prowess, the dude had 900 rebounds in 2 years.
That's pretty good, I guess.
That's pretty good. He was the leader, all-time leader, until Kosic broke the record, and Kosic did it in three, Collinsworth did it in four, right? I might have put him over Michael Smith, actually. Or maybe I just scrap having any guards besides Jimmer and take him instead of Nemelka. I don't know. But how about you? Would you have considered him, or does just the fact that he's a 6'5" center make it hard for him to fit on your team?
I would have considered him, but the fact that he's a 6'5" center would have made it a little bit tough.
Yeah.
But the rebounds would have been big. I mean, I remember when we were going through the list and I needed rebounds, and that's when I took Araujo. And I think that maybe I could have taken Mel Hutchins there. You could argue that would have been a better pick.
Yeah. Well, if you did, if you got a chance to, if you didn't get a chance to listen to that episode, that's episode 233. Our draft of the top 10 basketball players starts at about minute 25 in that particular episode. Go check that out. Matt, going back to football here, let's rewind 12 months ago, okay? Remember all the Taysom for Heisman hype?
I do. It was awesome.
Great schedule coming. Taysom puts up big numbers, dual threat quarterback, potential to win some games on a big stage. And of course, all that disappeared in game one. But something happened in game one. The legend of Tanner Mangum, or Tyler Mangrum, or Tyler Magnum, began with that awesome, unbelievable Hail Mary to Mitch Matthews. Matt, I don't hear any Taysom love for the Heisman right now, and you'll hear a few people mention Tanner Mangum as a possibility. How do you put that into perspective that here we are 12 months later, and Taysom is basically off the radar? Nationally, completely off the radar.
Well, I think there's two pieces to it. College football is very much a "what have you done for me lately" type of environment. And Timmy Mugnam put together some really exciting finishes last year.
Timmy was good.
Timmy was great. Real quick, parenthetically, we share a last name with him. Okay, probably related somewhere way back in time.
Sure,
but so I'm sure he understands this. I've heard this name, arm last name, mispronounced any of 100 different ways, and I've always said that the worst one I'd ever heard was when somebody said it exactly backwards. I had somebody actually say it Mugnam, and that's crazy, right? That's crazy. So I devised this. I'll get back to my point in a minute. But so I come up with this little thing. And in loud places, people can't hear well or on the phone. Tell people it's Mangum. They're like, Magnum? No, it's Mangum, like a man chewing gum. Mangum. And they're like, oh, I get it. Okay, and then they spell it correctly. So Saturday, I'm at a restaurant with a large group of people, a lot of split checks. I'm there with one of my kids. So I'm like, okay, me and that one will be on our check. She's like, yeah, I'm just putting last names on each of the checks. So what's your last name?
Oh,
so it's not even that loud. It's Mangum. She's like, oh, is that Magnum? No, Mangum, like a man chewing gum. She says, oh, okay, Mangum, I got it.
Look at you go. You've hacked. So that's a life hack.
So the check comes.
Oh, no.
And the name is written on the check.
Mugnum?
Magdum.
Magdum.
It was the mag dumbest way I've ever seen anybody spell my last name.
Wah, wah, wah. So when I was in high school, we sat around as we would wait for our coach, who, by the way, no joke, our high school basketball coach was a parole officer. And we would wait for him to come in and, you know, we'd be goofing around or whatever. And one of the players on our team, who's a point guard, who was a year behind me, he says, you know, we ought to do all our names backwards and come out to those names. So there's a couple of really good names. One of my high school basketball teammates, his name was Frank Giglio. You'll remember Frank.
I remember Frank.
His name backwards is Canarf Oil Gig.
That's the best
one. That's the best one. And, of course, I was Mata Mugnam. And it was, like you said, I've never heard someone do that, though, to my name, that I wasn't doing it on purpose. That's pretty awesome.
Yeah.
So, Matt.
So the point was, why isn't Tanner Mangum getting any Heisman love? And I think it's that, you know, college football has become very much a what have you done for me lately type of environment is one piece of it. The other piece is this. On a national level, you know, BYU and the players at BYU and who the stars are at BYU can kind of get lost in some of that talk.
Yeah.
You know, Taysom had an opportunity before last year when he was getting some of that hype. He had had a season before. You know, there had been this story about him coming from Stanford and those types of things.
Yep.
And then last season, he just kind of, you know, he drifted off of the radar. And then Tanner received all this attention. So as a lot of these national writers are rebooting their coverage, they're going back to where names that popped up last year is what they're doing, and who's still around. Oh, this Tanner Mangum guy's still around. Well, what does their schedule look like? Oh yeah, okay, he's the guy who could go on the list. You know, that's essentially what's happening here, in my opinion.
The Bleacher Report article, Brian Peterson, writer for Bleacher Report, he lists Tanner Mangum as one of, I think, 10 or 12 guys that are underclassmen who have a decent shot at winning at some time. He wasn't even talking necessarily about this year. He was talking about, in theory, before they graduate. And so if you look at his list, it's quarterback heavy, which makes sense because a lot of quarterbacks, of course, win the award over time. But he's got Tanner on that list, which I thought was, like you said, telling. But it's also just, okay, he put up big numbers as a freshman, you know, and he talks a lot about his, you know, his pedigree being recruited in the same class as Jameis Winston, which everybody talks about. But then those big wins, you know, those Hail Marys against Boise State and Nebraska will follow Mangum forever, right? It's just part of what a national or a local writer's going to talk about when they talk about him.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm with this writer. I actually think Mangum, I don't think he'll be in the conversation this year, but assume he starts from game one. I'm just, you know, making that up. And he has a really good year against a great schedule. And say they're only 8-4, so it's not anything national. I think he's a Heisman, you know, top 10 front runner going into this junior year. I'll predict it now. Throwing down that gauntlet.
Well, let's write that down and come back to it.
No, I don't ever write down my predictions because then people will hold you accountable.
Who wants to be held accountable anymore?
Remember when we did that last season? We're not doing that again.
That's embarrassing.
It's embarrassing at the end.
Accountability
of the year.
Is embarrassing.
Yeah, it's absolutely terrible. So we got a tweet bag question off of Facebook from Johnny Ashton. He actually does hashtag it, I believe, Facebag, which we're still not sure that's the right word.
Facebag.
So he says, Taysom Hill is a freakish athlete that could probably play any position except O-line. I think you're selling him short, Johnny. I'm not saying he should switch positions, good, but if he were to switch, what is one position on offense and one on defense? I feel like we've talked about this before, but that has never stopped us from discussing something
again. We have,
again.
And I know exactly what your answer is, but before we answer it, I'm going to throw out there and say, in the right kind of offense, he could play offensive line.
What offense? Stop
Delta,
it.
Delta Wing T. Put him in at guard.
Delta Wing
fullback.
T. Yeah.
Well, nobody runs that crap
anymore. 1947 called. They like their offense back. Stop.
But if you ran that, he could play guard.
Stop. Against who? Tempview? Not in Division I college football, he couldn't. I think Taysom is possibly the best athlete to ever suit up for BYU, like in pure speed, strength, all of those measurable skills. I don't think he could be an offensive lineman. That being said,
I'll let the offensive lineman thing go.
What is one other offensive position that you think he could be great at besides quarterback?
So I already know what you're going to say, so I'm going to say something else.
Okay.
I'd like to see him on like a tight end, but not really a blocking tight end, like split him out a little bit and get some mismatches with people who just won't be able to keep up with him speed-wise.
Kind of like an H-back?
Yeah.
Yeah, and you could give it to him on sweeps, too?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah, or a little short passes, stuff out in the flats, stuff across the middle. Try and get him lined up with a linebacker who won't be able to keep up with him.
Or tight end screens. Can you imagine, set up a screen for him, and all you have to do is give him one block and see you later.
Yep.
Can we bring Jordan Leslie back to throw the block?
Oh, that would be awesome.
I would say running back, because you know I was going to say this. We did this around spring football time, or maybe it was after he got hurt sometime in the season. I think if he became a running back, he'd be the best running back BYU's ever had. I think he already may be the best running back BYU's ever had. He just happened to play quarterback. But I think he's right up in that discussion with Luke Staley as the best runner to ever play at BYU. On defense, Matt, where would you put him?
I'd have him play safety.
Yeah,
I'd love to just see him just crush folks.
Safety would be good. I think he could bulk up and be quite an outside linebacker too.
Could you put him back there? Let him read offenses. I think he'd have a real nose for the football.
I'm not disagreeing with you, man, but can you imagine him putting on an extra 25 or 30 pounds and rushing a quarterback? What offensive lineman is going to be? If the offensive lineman doesn't get a hand on him, it's over.
Yeah.
Right?
Oh, yeah. And he could really mess some people up. Oh. Imagine the hits he would put on people.
It'd be fantastic. Obviously, we are not suggesting, nor do either of us, I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, believe that he should switch positions for his senior year, right?
No.
No, he's a quarterback, and he should stay a quarterback. And as we've seen the last few seasons, it's better to have two than one.
Or zero.
Or zero, as we have had that before. Absolutely. And you can listen to, if you fast-forwarded past Ben Criddle today, go back, he had some things to say on the two quarterback. Matt, we have a tweet bag suggested topic for today.
Tweet bag.
Who suggested it? Do you remember?
Sweeney. I don't know who started it.
I don't think it was Sweeney's. Let me, I've got it written down somewhere. If only I put all this stuff on the internet. It was actually Todd Andy on Twitter.
Sorry, Todd. I didn't mean to sell you out like that.
He said our top five sporting events. We're going to do three. Okay. Number one, it'll get clear as to why here in a second. first out of the tweet bag, we have a few folks sharing theirs, Matt, which I asked for. Justin D. Sweeney on Twitter.
Sweeney.
Yeah, that was a premature Sweeney. You should
have
waited.
No, it wasn't. Listen, you should have waited. I think the Justin will back me up here. You can't have too much Sweeney.
Fair enough. All right. So the last three games he attended in person are 2009 FSU, Shattered Top 10 Dreams, 2010 BYU University of Utah 54-10, and the 2015 UCLA hashtag tweetbag crying emoji. Okay, all right, not great memories,
just,
Justin.
That was just painful.
I'm asking you to not go to any games in the near future.
That tweet makes me sad.
That tweet does make me sad. I said he would be back. Andre Hutchins, that's at AC_Hutchins, said, my dad and I attended both BYU-Texas games together in Provo and Austin. The Longhorn beatdowns have been burned into my brain. And burned in burnt orange, I would think. And by burnt orange, I mean Red McCombs and whoever that writer is, really burnt orange. Just saying. Anything? Were you going to say something? Nothing. I cut you off.
I got nothing. I had a bad joke. I had a bad joke to make. It's better that you cut me off.
Oh, good, good. Sometimes that works out. And then Todd, of course, jumps in, and he says, Detmer, Miami, Nuff said. I wish I could say that. I listened to it on the radio on my way back from a steak dance.
Oh, yeah. Adam coming home from the steak dance.
Stupid.
Oh, yeah.
Stupid. I won't say it. I just didn't want to go to that dance that night. I wasn't really excited.
I can imagine.
To go to that steak activity. So, Matt, let's start off. Give us an event that you attended in person that is one of your favorite BYU memories.
So I'm going to go ahead and maybe steal one of yours.
Stop.
Because you and I were at this game together. And
well, this
I guess,
isn't a draft. We can have the same ones.
Yeah, we can have the same ones. But I'm going to go ahead and say the 2012 BYU game at Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Now, it was a loss, but it was a game. It was a winnable game. We're essentially one wide open receiver away.
If only
from winning
still,
that game.
I could still see it. There he is.
He was. I remember
Hoffman
yelling.
He's
I remember
wide
yelling,
open.
He's open. He's open.
And all of a sudden, a duck is released from behind the line of scrimmage. Just
so,
like, no. No,
that was a tough year. That was a tough year. We had a guy trying to step up, and anyway, I've got whole new feelings for Riley Nelson. I know at the time I was very negative on Riley Nelson.
Very negative.
Knowing,
yeah, that's an understatement.
Knowing what we know now about what was going on with those players, I think that Riley Nelson did what he had to do.
So go back.
He was hurt. He was hurt. Anyway, so my point is this. My point is that game. The environment in South Bend was a ton of fun. It was a close game. It was a big game that we had a chance to win on a national stage. There were a lot of BYU fans there in an historic stadium. I mean, it was a lot of fun. That trip, and besides that trip, just from a trip perspective, it was a brother's weekend for us. I mean, it was a great time. So that game right there is probably my number one.
You know, it was the trip that I realized all my brothers are scared of heights but me.
Oh, great. Now we're going to talk about my fear of heights.
if you're really interested, listeners, go back to episode 40 and you can listen to Matt, his opinions on Riley Nelson.
you will see if you do that I've come a long way.
I looked it up because I knew you were going to talk about this game. Anyway, go back and listen to that. I actually don't know if the file still works. They do restrict our on Podbean how many ones we can keep, but it may still be there. Matt, I'm going to pick another Notre Dame game, and that was 2003. That was the first time I had really ever gone to a BYU road game, and first time at Notre Dame. I was a first-year business school student, and again, a winnable game in which we lost. Not as winnable, but one we could have, I thought we could have competed, but it was just cool to be there. And Notre Dame, like the old fans, like the people that live there and go to the games, are some of the nicest fans I've ever met, both times I've been there. They're like genuinely nice.
Yeah.
It was pretty cool. What else you got?
I'm going to go with this, and this is a close second for me.
Okay.
The 1996 BYU Texas A&M game in Provo.
Yes.
Now, I have so many times been accused of being obsessed with the 1996 BYU football team, which is understandable because it's probably the best BYU football team of all time.
And you're obsessed.
But it's not hard to be obsessed with what is probably the best BYU football team of all time. But okay. that game was awesome.
Oh, yeah.
That was an unbelievable game. It was the first BYU game that I saw in person. And
that was your first one?
Yes.
I didn't
realize
that.
Yes.
Or if I did, I'd forgotten.
And we'd made the trip from Boston out that summer. And that was unreal. I mean, I will never forget. I mean, you know, the back and forth, the coming score in there at the end, running down on the field. I mean, that was, as an experience, you know, that was unbelievable. And it set off, if you think about it, in the history, in the context of the BYU football history, that set off, you know, a really unbelievable season, you know, with the exception of that one slip up against Washington, but an unbelievable season with a top 10 finish, win against Kansas State on New Year's Day. I mean, it was, you know, I think, what were they, fifth at the end of the season? That was a really fun year, really fun season. I watched, I don't know how many times I've watched highlights from that game in my lifetime. I used to watch them when I was in high school. Every night before I played a football game, I watched a 1996 highlight video. But, well, I guess that's not all my years in high school because I was already partway through high school at that point. So it was, all right, so it was one season after that. But my point is, I watched that video a lot. and I still have it. That was one of the greatest BYU football games of all time.
Yes, and I'm really glad you're obsessed with the third best team that BYU's ever had.
Maybe you missed what I said earlier, but I was talking about the 1996 team. You
know, 1980 the best. And 1984. Keep that in mind, folks. My next one is going to be a win. So there you go.
Hey, I had a win. I had a win here. That was a win. Texas A&M was a win.
Here's the thing. I also loved watching that Texas A's end game on a VHS cassette after I got home from my mission.
Oh, that's awkward.
Oh, my gosh. I missed. Regardless of whether you think it's number one, number two, or number three, I was 8 years old in 1984, and I don't remember 1980 at all. So 96 was my best chance to see one of the best teams we've ever had, and unfortunately I wasn't there. I may or may not have seen the Cotton Bowl, though. I can neither confirm nor deny that I watched that live.
Probably good if you just leave that out.
Yeah, we'll just leave that out. Matt, I'm going to go to 2001. Not one of the best teams BYU's ever had, but not a terrible team. And we're going to talk about the victory against Utah in November of that year, in which I was there with my wife, and we it was a crazy story. I've told it on the podcast before. She threw out her back. We're in the room, the first aid room, and then I got to watch the end of it standing in the aisle next to a Utah fan who predicted the Gennaro Guilford interception right before it happened. He turned to me and said, "Our kicker is terrible. We're going to have to throw one or two more passes than we need to." And then I just saw Guilford, and you could see it happening. He read the quarterback, stayed out of his sight line, and then just stepped right in and stole the game. It was a thing of beauty. Now you've got your third one.
So my third one is going to be a little bit of a departure from. It's going to be a little bit of departure from football.
All right. Take a departure from football.
So what I'm going to do is I'm going to go back to 1999. This is the 1999.
You're going to party like it's 1999?
Oh, yes, sir. Yes, sir, I am. So, and this is, I'm going to go ahead and pick, this is two consecutive games. Well, but they're matches. So this is March 26th and 27th. Men's volleyball against Pepperdine in Provo. I think, and really the second night, the 27th was the big one. It was a little bit more crowded in there. But that environment, that's what sold me on. And it wasn't even earlier that season. There was the game they played. They played Hawaii in the Marriott Center or whatever. But those games right there is really what got me. That's one of my favorite memories as a student of BYU is attending those two games. I'd been to a lot of volleyball games that year, but those were unbelievable. I can remember plays from those matches very vividly, and that team was unreal. You go back, you talk about Ryan Millar, Rich Lamborn, Ozzie Antonetti. This was a great team, a historically good team for BYU, historically good in NCAA volleyball. I mean, 30-1 at the end of the year.
Yeah.
This was a very good team. Pepperdine was decent that year. Especially the second night, they really smoked them. But yeah. That was just a ton of fun. And that, when I think about when I watch today, when I watch BYU volleyball on BYU TV, and when the environment's really good, that's the game that it takes me back to. That's what I remember when I watch that on BYU TV.
Yeah, yeah. And I unfortunately missed those matches working at the Brick Oven.
I think I went to the Brick Oven after those matches.
I believe you did it both times, and I believe I did both times.
I think I drank delicious root beer.
I think you did, and I will neither confirm nor deny that you worked at
It was Zuka Juice at the time.
Zuka Juice at the time, right? But it's now Jamba Juice, right?
Yep.
They took them over. I will neither confirm nor deny that you may have given a free Zuka Juice to Ryan Millar.
I will neither confirm nor deny that. But
would that be an NCAA violation?
But,
Are you going to be responsible when they take away the 1999 championship?
I think we've said too much.
I'll edit this part out. Matt, my last one, I'm totally not editing it out, by the way. My last one is I was going to bring up the 1999 WAC championship game against Air Force, but it was way too depressing, so I didn't.
Well, but now you did, so thanks.
And then there is a WAC championship game against Wyoming a few years before that in Vegas, which was a good one that I attended in person. But I'm going to go with in Provo against Arizona State in 1998. Great game, great win. And Arizona State was ranked 15th. And there was a bunch of really obnoxious Arizona State fans sitting near where in the student section. Near where we were sitting, I think they probably were BYU students from Arizona. And they were being very obnoxious in the first quarter. They were not as obnoxious in the fourth. But you know what? I'm like Sweeney. I have not seen a lot of great games in person. Most of the great games I remember happened on me watching them on TV. You know, I don't have a 1996 Texas A&M on my in-person resume. I just don't. It's just how it is, man. How it is. But how about when we beat West Virginia this year?
Oh, that's going to be awesome. That'll make the list.
That'll make the list. And actually, I could.
And that'll be the game that gets us into the Big 12.
That's right. That's right. We'll see. Yeah, we'll see if the Austin American Statesman talks about that.
Yeah.
Take that. Rider with a mustache.
Mustache man.
Yeah, mustache man. Anyway, well, thank you guys for listening. Hope you enjoyed the interview with Ben Criddle. Hope you enjoyed our banter here for the last 50 minutes or so. We are off next week because of the holiday and because, well, you and I have to take breaks every once in a while. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We've got some great guests that I can't talk about yet, but we've got some cool guests that will be coming up this summer that we're lining up as we speak. And of course, we'll soon be, Matt, our previews will start before you know it. That's we're crazy. Only a month away from you and I jumping into previewing the season mode. So
that's awesome.
We're going to have a lot of cool preview shows, cover everything in depth, a lot like we did last summer. Thanks, everybody, for downloading and listening. If you get a chance, go check out that story that I wrote on the Des News in the sports section about the top 10 BYU men's basketball player draft. Go ahead and check us out on iTunes. Tell your friends and tell your neighbors, and we will catch you next time.
Go Cougars! Three days to the living room. I realized it's all my fault, but couldn't tell you yesterday. You'd forgiven me, but it'll still be 2 days till I say I'm sorry. Hold it, now I'll watch a hoodwink. Does it make you stop, think? You'll think you're looking at Aquaman. I summon fish to the dish, although I like the chalet Swiss. I like the sushi, cause it's never touch a frying pan. Hot like wasabi when I bust rhymes. Speak like Leanne rhymes, because I'm all